Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello, Strong Tower Radio listeners, and those accessing our archived programs on strongtowerradio.org. Our God is good, and everything about Him is good. People reflect His character and do good, but we live in a sinful world. Since Adam and Eve chose to satisfy self and disregard God's ways, our world has been in a world of hurt. I'm your host, Tom Majure, and this month, Strong Tower Radio is supporting the designation of the Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Strong Tower Radio is intentionally making this horrible topic known. For full disclosure, I've gone through the full stages of denial of this horrible event, to saying it's not in my neighborhood, to asking the Lord, what would you have me to do about this? Today is the third of four programs, actually, one starting in February of last year when we became aware of the human trafficking event, and three here in the month of January in 2024. Our subject matter expert today is Trooper Corey Hebner. He's an officer with the Michigan State Police. He's a community officer. Welcome, Trooper Corey.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're doing great. So we're going to be talking about this difficult subject, but there is hope and help, and we can be a part of this. Let us go to our God in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we just want to thank you for who you are. You are all loving. You are a good God, and you ask your people, all people, to be good to each other. Unfortunately, that is not, some have chosen and some are put in a very difficult situation. And so, Lord, we want to be your eyes, your ears, and your hands, your feet, in order to serve our fellow men by being informed and doing accordingly as you ask us to do. Just be with our listeners today as they deal with this difficult subject, but also call them to action. In Jesus' name, amen. Officer Corey, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. You're with the Michigan State Police. Tell us about the post that you're located on and your role in the Michigan State Police system.
Yeah, so my role is really different. Yeah, I'm a community services trooper, so I get to do programming in the public. A lot of times I do trainings for different groups, maybe doctors, nurses, home health care workers. I also get in the schools, and we're able to affect hopefully a little bit of change in our school system. I've been blessed to be all over the state. You know, I started in Petoskey back in 1995 after I got out of recruit school. And by 1997, I trooped out of Detroit. I was there 3.5 years, and my in-laws had moved from Harbor Springs up to Curtis. The Newberry post came open. That was a good fit. So I started working in the Eastern UP and was there for about 4 years, transferred over to St. Ignace. I worked out of the St. Ignace post for about 12 years. And then probably 13 years ago, I was able to transfer back to Gaylord. So I have literally been all over the state, whether it's actually a work location or sometimes when we get mobilized for details, different programs that come up. I've been able to watch the Red Wings win the Stanley Cup, downtown Detroit, and some of the other things that we get mobilized for. So I've had a pretty healthy career, and I've really been, the last 11, 12 years, been drawn to the positive interactions that we've had when it comes to community service. And so it's a different way to look at things. You know, you're not contacting people and remind them of the negative things they did, whether it was speeding or maybe they violated some sort of other law. You're actually able to see that 85-90% of people that never contact law enforcement. And it's really funny because the social media interaction and the media interaction that we have really draws things in a certain light and in a certain way. And once you contact information and find it, it's really amazing how it isn't so. And so that's the thing that I really love about this topic today. It's a darker topic. It's something that you can't use a lot of humor with when you do presentations for people because of the gravity, the levity of what you're talking about. But it does help us bring this into light. So it is a darker topic. I can't use a lot of humor when we do this stuff, but it is a necessary thing.
Yes, necessary. You know, Trooper Corey, I was doing a little bit of reading in the scriptures this morning, and this text popped out, and then it led to a further study. That's Psalms 97:10. Ye that love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the soul of the saints, and he delivers them out of the hand of the wicked. And in the Seventh-day Adventist Bible commentary, the phrase, hate evil, the psalmist concludes with an exhortation to hate evil. Looking at Psalms 34:14, depart from evil and do good. And then the commentary says this, quote, Christian living is both negative, and officer, we talked about a negative dark side, both negative and positive. We must go away from evil and we must do good. And this is the phrase that I bolded. Merely refraining from evil is not good enough. We must be actively doing good. And then I looked at one other phrase here. Indifference to evil opens the way for Satan to enter the life. So, officer, let's talk a little bit about the history of human trafficking. Human trafficking, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I thought it was slavery and such, and we don't have slavery in the United States. And then it became that it's not only forced labor, but it can also be in sex trafficking. But still, it wasn't in my neighborhood, that progression. First, there's awareness. And then it's like, well, it's not, I can't affect change. And then over the last year, I've been exposed to different information to see how close this is to us. And you, in your presentation that you gave, I attended your seminar that you do across the state on human trafficking, I realized how close it is. Tell our listeners let's start the definition of human trafficking and then maybe go after the history in Michigan of human trafficking.
Yeah, so it's really one of those things that, and that's kind of the carrot that will dangle, right? We'll talk about some of the things locally. Because I think everybody kind of misses that. We think it's like the movie Taken or some of these other things that we've been able to visualize that it happens somewhere else, right? It's when we go on vacation in other countries. No, it happens right here in Michigan. So we're going to talk about that. It's really important that your viewers understand that. This is here. It's everywhere. And that's one of the big things that we really got to talk about today. But before we get there, want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about. We really try to break human trafficking into two distinct categories because they are two different things and two different ways that even the people that try to enslave someone try to operate because they are very different. One is that indentured servitude, right? The slave labor, when someone is forced to do work. Well, why would someone do that? We'll get into it. The other is the sex industry. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about prostitution or if we're talking about erotic dancing and photography. Remember, erotic dancing photography can be legal if that person is consenting at a certain age. But when someone's underage, it's definitely illegal. And so that's why those two subcategories are linked under human trafficking, the sex trafficking, because if someone is a minor, they can't consent at any age to be photographed or to forced to strip at strip clubs and stuff like that. That's why that's listed under that category. So labor trafficking, very simply, it's that recruitment, the harboring, the transportation of those people to use those services, that labor, maybe by force, maybe by coercion, to subjugate those people for involuntary working. They may be enslaved. They may hold all their documents, but they're forced to, in some capacity, to do labor and maybe not be compensated fully for what they're doing that work for. On the sex trafficking side, it's a commercial sex act. Whether it is that photography, stripping, or an actual act, that's by force, fraud, or coercion to perform that act under the age of 18 or 21, depending upon the state and the area.
I'm going to take our two previous programs tended to deal with the latter issue, the indentured labor. How prevalent is it, and where does that show up? And let me just say it's probably, listeners, it's probably closer to you than you realize.
Yeah, and so I think anytime you have a language barrier, right, that could be one of those things, because it's more difficult for English-speaking people to see, to understand, and to notice. A lot of times when we're in Walmart or out in the public and we hear people talking in different languages, we don't pay any attention to it. So we don't pay attention as much, but that's also the barrier that a captor can use to make that person feel isolated. And so those are some of the things. You know, when we talk about, you know, some of the foreign workers that we have up in Mackinac City, Mackinac Island, or some of the resorts that we have in our area, obviously the potential is there that someone could be taken advantage of, whether they don't get paid the right wages or they're actually limited at what they can do and they're forced to work above and beyond what they're compensated for. But I have to start off that 99.9% of any company business, if they're a good, legitimate business, they're going to make sure that they treat their employees well. And the reason is it's all about developing relationships. They want those employees to come back year after year after year. So, you know, most of these companies, most of these groups, when they bring in foreign workers, they follow all the rules, right? We're looking for other things beyond that. And so that's what we're talking about. You know, most of the bigger companies are going to do things right. They want to make sure that they have a relationship and they have those, you know, those workers come back year after year after year. But there are times where we can see different red flags, and that's what we're trying to talk about with the education, with the training that we do, to make sure people understand, you know, what human trafficking can look like in that labor or that indentured servitude area.
What industries tend to use foreign labor?
Well, I mean, yeah, just look at those industries that we see, whether it's healthcare, whether it's a business, whether it's landscape companies, t-shirt companies, nail salons, spas, any of the places where you go and you look at a bigger city, a larger metropolitan city, and you see a group of people that may or may not be there at their own volition. You know, if you go to a metro city and you see, you go into a spa or a nail salon and you see certain people from a certain background that are forced to be there, that's a huge red flag. You know, what they're being controlled or et cetera. A lot of times the transportation that they're provided to get to work is, you know, it's not on them. They don't have to go to and from, or they don't have the ability to go to and from where they live to their place of employment. Those should be huge red flags. When, you know, people have a group of people and they take them to go shopping, well, is it because they don't have transportation, or are they trying to control and manipulate people? We've seen some things in metro areas where they actually have a whole floor of a hotel for just their workers, and they control the workers from, you know, their place of employment to where they actually stay. Those should be huge red flags.
I'm even aware that there's migrant workers in our area, and transportation is so huge that if you miss the bus to get your groceries and stuff on that day, you miss the whole week. That's huge. If you're sick and you can't go and get your groceries on the shopping day, it's huge. Even in a legitimate situation, it's more difficult for them.
Oh, absolutely. And so you got to make sure that, I have a group of 20 workers and we're trying to just get them from point A to point B, or, is this someone that's being forced to do this type of labor? Because a lot of times it's just like you said, right? I have a certain schedule, I have to get 20 people to point A to point B. And if, somebody's sick that day, if somebody, isn't feeling well, how do you deviate and take care of your employees if they don't have transportation? Is it a sick day or is it a day where we actually need to seek medical attention? And so those are the things when I talk to and do trainings for our healthcare industry, right? It's one thing for someone to come in and have a language barrier, need an interpreter. It's another thing for someone to not go and seek follow-up care, right? If you have somebody that, legitimately has an injury, breaks a bone in their body, it would be normal to have, a 4 to 6 week follow-up. And if that person isn't receiving follow-up care, then that should be a huge red flag, right? Maybe they don't need it, or maybe, that person isn't allowing them to seek, follow-up for that medical care. So, some things are legitimate, some things are red flags, and that's what in the training we want to make sure that people understand. One abnormality, one red flag, not a big deal. But when you see 2, 3, 4 of these things, that's when we really need to start asking, other questions. And so that's the important thing about training is that, okay, yeah, don't get paranoid off of one thing, but when we see a whole bunch of these things, that's when we need to start doing that investigation, that follow-up.
Very good. Listeners, that is the person you're listening to is Trooper Corey Hebner, and I'm Tom Azure with Strong Tower Radio. We're talking about human trafficking during the month of awareness of human trafficking. We'll be back after this break.
The Bible and God's character are under attack like never before. Here at Strong Tower Radio, we are proud to hold up the Bible as a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and contains the good news of God's character and His great plan of salvation for mankind. If you know and believe this to be true, won't you help Strong Tower Radio proclaim the truth about our God and His Word, the Bible? To do that, go to www.strongtowerradio.org, and there, on our secure website, you will find a donate button. Click on that and give as the Lord directs. Thank you for listening and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back. I'm Tom Mazur with Strong Tower Radio, and we're talking about human trafficking, a very difficult subject, but a one that we must be aware for ourselves, for our families, and for our community. We have Trooper Corey Hebner, and welcome back, Trooper Corey.
Hey, thank you, sir.
Hey, I really appreciate you have such a warm, inviting presentation. I can tell that your heart is really into your job. What in your background gave you this warm, caring sense of our community? It's a wonderful story. Please share that with our listeners.
No, I grew up in a pretty terrific small town, place called Millington, down by Bertrand, Frankenmuth. And it was just a really neat farm town that there were a lot of people in my life and everything that I did that just had the service to community as the big thing that drove them. And even in my own family, my grandma worked for the superintendent for 30 some years. My mom volunteered to be on the school board, and my cousin Les, probably one of the best role models I could have ever had. He, about 10 years older than me, and he got into law enforcement. He just retired about 6 years ago from Grand Rapids Police Department. But in my family, it was always that driving thing that you had to be part of the community and you had to serve.
Wow. I've had the privilege of meeting a few troopers, especially with this job that I have here. And once you get to know the troopers, you just love their stories, and they are wonderful stories of why they serve. Trooper Corey, would you please just kind of give our listeners a review if they missed the first segment on what we talked about?
Well, the first part, we just kind of talked about human trafficking and what it is. We wanted to try to make sure that everybody understood that wasn't just the sex industry, but also the forced labor, that indentured servitude. And then, some of the things about human trafficking. They estimate that we have about 21 million people enslaved in the world at any given time. And that human trafficking, there's actually more people enslaved now than in the history of what we think of that slave trade back in the 1800s, 1700s. And one of the questions that people have is, why would somebody get into this? Or how does this happen? How do people that even do this industry, how could they do this or justify this? And the big thing is money. We estimate that for every person that's enslaved, that person that's, their captor makes about $300,000 a year off of each person that they control. And so that's how this works. And that's how, this gets exploited.
That's why it happens, unfortunately, besides the evil intent. Michigan has a history with labor issues and with human trafficking. I'm very interested in hearing that.
Yeah, and so it really started, one of my old partners actually in Detroit, Detective Sergeant, he's now a Detective Lieutenant, Ed Price, back in 2007, they formed the Southeast Michigan Crimes Against Children, or SMCAC. And they said, we think this is a problem. We're going to start this task force, and it was aimed at Southeast Michigan, right? Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County. And they said, hey, let's go see if we have a huge problem. They started getting involved with the FBI. They started a program called Operation Cross Country. And it was basically a bunch of reverse stings. And when they started to get involved in Operation Cross Country in 2008, Michigan was one of the 10 states that kind of got involved. And we found that we do have a pretty porous border with Canada, that helps initiate some more activity in our state than if we were maybe in the central part of the country. But we also know that this is something that's greater than our population base in Michigan. And so when they recovered a whole bunch of, if you've ever heard statistics from that first thing, who's ever heard that Michigan is second in juveniles recovered in human trafficking? Well, part of it was, those statistics were skewed because of that first operation. They only had 16 cities and 10 states that were involved. But when we recovered the second most amount of children involved in human trafficking, that kind of stuck. And so you'll hear some statistics that are out there. They may not be accurate. However, we know that even though our population base is somewhere in the middle of the pack of the 50 states, we know that because of our relationship, our closeness with Canada and the border, that we probably have more activity in our state than other states our size.
So we have kind of a pass-through besides anything that is local or regional.
Sure.
You shared something in your seminar, and you're willing to give this presentation in many, many places. And at the end of the program, please share that your contact information. But you mentioned about the T. To explain that, just completely hit me as why Michigan has a role in human trafficking.
Yeah, and so we we talk about a lot of different things, but what you're referring to in the T is when drugs usually come up from the central part of our country. They come from Texas, right, from that Mexican border. And as they go north, you pick a few of those highways, but I-35 is one of them. I-35 drives right through the middle of our country, up through Kansas City, all the way to Minnesota. And then from that top of our country, when people try to go east and west in Canada, especially, the only road that really goes east and west in Canada is Highway 17. Well, when people are coming from the east side of Canada and they come through Ontario, you get stuck in Sault Ste. Marie. And you have to make a decision whether you want to go all the way up and around on Highway 17 around Lake Superior, or you drop into the UP and then you can cut across M28 or US 2. And all of a sudden, if you drop into Michigan and cut across the Upper Peninsula, go through Wisconsin, Minnesota, US 2 and M28 run straight through Minnesota where that intersects with I-35. So if I want to smuggle things, you know, up through Chicago, I can deviate off of I-35 to Chicago. We know that we also have a big corridor from, you know, I-94 going from Chicago to Detroit. You know, that gets people right to, you know, another border right there in Windsor. So we know that those two borders in Sault Ste. Marie and Windsor, because of, you know, the highways work, that kind of is a, just a natural intersection where people can, you know, ship, whether it's drugs, guns, or people.
You even, in your presentation, mentioned U.S. 131. That came awfully close to home.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're obviously up here in northern Michigan, so that's the big corridor that we see coming up through, you know, that western south, you know, Niles area. You know, you go right from I-94 up 131. We're going through Grand Rapids up to Cadillac and northern Michigan. And so that's another way that people can come through the west side of our state right up to the Canadian border. You know, 131 goes through Petoskey up to the bridge, intersects with I-75, and then you're, you know, across the Mackinac Bridge to the International Bridge.
Is there anything more of the history of Michigan you'd like to share?
When we go through Operation Cross Country and some of the other things that we did, one of the leading driving forces of how we work in Michigan really goes back to Senator Emmons. She was phenomenal. She was one of the people that proposed 27 pieces of legislation, 23 of which got adopted. And then from that, the Attorney General at the time, Bill Schuette, started a Attorney General Task Force on Human Trafficking. And they were the two just driving forces of what we did. I do not care if you worship donkeys or elephants, and I'm sure your viewers understand what I mean by that. These two people didn't care about politics. They cared about Michiganders. And this was good stuff, good legislation that got proposed to really try to make a difference. Because before all of this, before we started with this operation, before the legislation changed, the only law that we really had to have any teeth was the Mann Act of 1917 or 1915. So we're using an archaic law that was about taking people across state lines. That was the only way that we could really enforce things federally in our state. And so that's why this legislation needed to change. And it was really awesome that they were the right people at the right time that drove this. And so from, you know, the Attorney General's office, we still have people like Kelly Carter, who goes in and she will help any of our 83 counties, those prosecuting offices, give them the information they need to prosecute a case, or they'll actually help them maybe even take over a case if they've never had a human trafficking case in their county. And so that's the other thing. The Attorney General's office, SEMCAC, they don't just work in those three counties of Michigan anymore. They take cases all over the state. And so, you know, that human trafficking task force is definitely expanded, unfortunately, throughout our state. And their investigations have taken them. I know Ed Price, one of his first big cases, he actually had to go to Hawaii to continue that investigation, working with the FBI and some of those other federal agencies to get resolution to that case.
Let's talk about risk factors and how close those are to home. You mentioned about our homeless youth and their risk factors. Share that with our listening audience.
Yeah, one of the things that we really looked at when I do the training is an older study from 2007 called the Toledo Study. The University of Toledo looked at victims and people that were victimized, And they said, how and why? Let's find out the causation of this problem by looking at our victims and trying to really figure out and find why these people are impacted by this. What makes this a decision? What puts this, you know, in their daily thought process?
This isn't a natural thing that people would do. Why do they do it?
Yeah. And so, you know, you really have to be, I think, in a tough spot, or you have to be tricked. And so those are the two biggest things that we see. One, we know that statistically speaking, kids that are in foster care are going to be approached more. We also know that kids that are runaways are going to be approached more. The Toledo study actually gave us a statistic that said if you are gone from your house, run away, within 48 hours, 1 in 3 kids are going to be approached to join the sex industry.
48 hours? That's just
48 hours.
That's just two days away from home.
That's 2 days away from home. And what really scares me, and you know, I coach high school sports. I've had two kids that, you know, are teenagers. They're now a little bit older now. But when I look at, you know, and going into the schools and talking to and, you know, doing programs with the schools, there are healthy numbers in each of our schools where we have kids that are technically homeless. They are couch surfing. They are going from friend's house to friend's house to friend's house because they've been kicked out of their house because there's a relationship problem with mom and dad, or, you know, they are in foster care. And so we really want to make sure that, you know, when we talk about, you know, those kids mentally, there's already, you know, something, feelings that are different, right? Because I have been kicked out of my house, because maybe I can't live with mom and dad for whatever reason that is. What do you feel your value is? And I think the monsters that do this, they prey on that. They really try to attack kids that feel a little bit more beaten and downtrodden. The other way that we see people attracted into this lifestyle, I guess, if you will, is they'll start to, you know, it's that party mentality. It's like, hey, your parents are stupid. Your parents don't understand what you're going through. I care about you. I love you. We're having fun over here. Here's alcohol. Here's all sorts of illicit drugs once I get you hooked on alcohol. Then once you're attracted to or addicted to a substance, I've got you, because now the substance is also controlling you. It's not just a lifestyle. And when you see that, oh my gosh, my boyfriend, he cares about me. He gives me all these things, all these, you know, material goods, all these, you know, substances. I can get whatever I want. It sounds fun until all of a sudden 3, 4, 5 weeks, once that addiction starts, you find that your boyfriend has other boyfriends or girlfriends. You find out that you have to do things to get the drug of choice that you want. All of a sudden, this veil gets pulled back. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, right? Pay no attention to the person behind the screen. And so that's how people get sucked and lured into this lifestyle. It's not a willing choice. It just sounds better. It sounds more attractive than what they had until they actually understand what it really truly is all about.
Share the risk factors that are involved. There's quite a number of them that lead up to falling into this black hole of human trafficking.
Yeah, and so as young people, right, we know that once people get sucked or lured into this industry, that if they're never interrupted, 77% of people, if they're, you know, in this industry as a child, they're going to continue as an adult. And part of it is what value do I have, right? You start asking yourself those types of questions. And if I don't have a driver's license, if I don't have a GED or a high school diploma because I started this and left home prior to doing all those things, I don't know what else I can do to give myself, you know, an environment, a house, a way of living. And so, you know, if uninterrupted, we know that 77% of kiddos are going to do that. The other thing that's really hurtful to the criminal justice portion of, you know, what I do, right? We know that our sex victims are also going to be a target. And that becomes a big problem or issue. And that's where the Attorney General really started to do this education and training for us. All 83 counties have a crime victim advocate. And if someone were already a victim of a sex crime, how do we explain to them that they may become victimized again? And so that's one of the biggest changes that we needed as a law enforcement prosecutor court system. We really needed to make sure that if we identify people as a victim, we have to make sure that they understand they can be victimized again. What we found is people that were victims of human trafficking, 57% of the time they had been raped previous. We also found that 30% of the time that person was someone from even outside of their family, and 14% of the time they were actually victimized multiple times by people inside and outside their family. So not just an incestuous thing, but they had been victimized by people outside their family that had still gained their trust in some way, shape, or form in most cases. And so we really wanted to look at that. The other thing that the Toledo study showed us is that 7 out of 10 times, victims had already been incarcerated for felonies. And so that's different, because when you look at the makeup of people that are institutionalized that are female as opposed to male, usually you don't see females that are risk takers. But in order to be arrested and sentenced for, you know, a felony in a prison, not a jail, a prison, that's usually pretty rare. And so identifying females that were risk takers that were also victimized by this is one of the big things that we saw from the Toledo study.
That really opened up a number of eyes. Well, listeners, we'll be back for the third and final segment with Trooper Corey with the Michigan State Police. And I'm your host, Tom Majure. You're listening to Strong Tower Radio on the subject of human trafficking.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button, or call 231-468-2087. We thank you, and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
Listeners, this is Tom Majure with Strong Tower Radio. We're talking about human trafficking. We've talked about labor trafficking, one of the items that I was not very well versed on in the past. And now we've also talked about the sex trafficking, a very difficult subject, a very sad, sad subject. Our subject matter expert today is Trooper Corey Hebner, and I'm Tom Majure. There's a 800 number. Let us mention that. If you are aware of a situation or somebody seeking help, there's a toll-free number that could be called for action to take place across the country, across the United States. That number is 888-3737-888. It has a nice cadence to it, 888 on both ends, and in the middle, 3737, 888-3737. Trooper Corey?
Yes, sir.
It's been said that this is a very difficult, when a person tries to exit the human trafficking and the sex industry, it's more difficult than drug addictions and some other difficult subjects. Why is this so difficult?
Yeah, pimps are master manipulators, and so I use the term pimp because in the sex industry, that's kind of what we identify, that person that leads a group of people or you know, enslaves a group of people. But part of it is those drug addictions, right? We know that substance use disorder is very difficult in and of itself. But when it's a family member who has a drug debt, and that's part of the reason why you're doing what you're doing, you also feel loyalties to people. And so one of the things, and I show a video in some of my training, where we actually have someone that after a couple months of being with someone, right, they've been addicted to a substance, they're forced to try to do this, but then they get traded. And so one of the red flags that we'll talk about here in a little bit sometimes is, you know, some of these signs and symptoms. And when you talk to people about tattoos, and in this industry, we'll actually see people that get tattooed against their will. They'll actually have the names of whoever is controlling them right on that tattoo or on their person. And so how worse of a feeling would that be to know that you are just like you're branded like an animal, or you're actually tattooed and you're, you know, that person that owns you's name is on your body. And so that's all part of that control. But we also see people get traded. So the problem is, I go to an event, I think it's going to be like a party, and then all of a sudden I'm leaving that party, going to a complete different state, different town, different city, whatever, with people that I don't even know. Now all of a sudden, who's the only person that's going to protect me when I'm forced to perform? My enslaver. And so all of a sudden, that changes things too. You got to remember, pimps or people that control people in the sex industry, in the human trafficking industry, they rape, murder, and kill people. That's what they do. So control is one of those things, whether it's with substances or other means, they're going to do whatever they can to control that person, to make them feel like they have no other means to get out of that situation. So it doesn't matter if it's a psychological thing, if it's a physical thing, or if it's a substance thing, they're going to control the situation.
What about entrapment?
Absolutely. And, you know, when someone is holding all of your documents, and you got to remember, if you get smuggled into a country, or you illegally come through a country, or maybe you even get here legally but overstay your work visa or whatever, when the person that's, you know, manipulating you, what they'll do is they'll tell you anything to keep you there. And so they say that, hey, you remember that person that took the $10,000 bribe to get you out of your country? Well, these are the people that are hunting you now, and they're going to take you back to your country. In a lot of other countries, militia and police are the same thing. There is no deviation between what law enforcement and the military is. So when those lines are blurred, or you don't trust those lines because those are people in your country that take bribes and stuff like that, you really have a hard time wanting to come forward and have those people help you.
I hear from the proverbial frying pan into the fire, they aren't the people that usually help you in some of these countries.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's just another way to manipulate people, that you're controlling them. And then when you're, you know, caught, you know, you don't have any of your documentation, any of your paperwork on you. So now you're even more worried about getting sent back if you can't have your identification on you when you go out in public. And so that's just another way, another layer of, you know, controlling that person.
What about blackmailing? This happens many times with those at the very early part of their engagement here. Explain how blackmailing is used.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the problem is a lot of times people take people at their word or at face value, especially if there's a language barrier. So now all of a sudden I say to you, hey, I tell you what, if you work for me for 6 months, a year, I'm going to try to legitimize and get you. I've got a guy that knows how to fake documents, right? So we're going to legitimize your citizenship here. And, you know, so I work for you for a year. And all of a sudden you say, hey, my guy can't come through for me right now, but, you know, in a couple more months, if you work for me for a couple more months, I'll get that, you know, done for you. Or maybe it's worse. Maybe it's not paperwork. Maybe it's another family member that you want to make sure that gets out of that situation because you're worried about what happens in their previous you know, country. You know, the conditions weren't good. That's why, you know, I left. So now I want to get my family members here. And so I promise that I'm going to work for you for 2 years. And now maybe my parents or my spouse or my kids are able to come to this country. The problem is once I reach that deadline, they dangle that carrot further and further and further. And so, you know, just another way to try to manipulate people. And that's what we see.
I'd also heard that sometimes photographs, they get young people to do something and then they don't want to use that against them to expose them. And it's all kinds of.
Yeah. We had a video that we use in the training where we have, you know, we know about the modeling industry or the music industry, right? So I think that you're talented and I want to photograph you in a certain way and we're going to market you in a certain way. Or I think that you have, you know, the ability to get into the music industry. So we maybe even have a studio session where we tape this stuff. And, you know, all of a sudden afterwards, we have a little bit of a party. Maybe you agree to some things. Maybe you're intoxicated and you can't agree to things. But when you are intoxicated, we strip you. We force you to have sex because you're inebriated. And then we photograph it. We videotape it. And then all of a sudden, the following day, you may or may not remember these things, but all of a sudden, we're going to show you, you know, part of what we did, and now we're going to manipulate you to continue to do things that we want you to do, even though you weren't agreeing to it in the first place. And now because you have an image out there, you're worried that this is going to get tarnished.
Let's talk about the risk factors and red flags.
Yeah, and so when I do trainings for different groups, there's a lot of different things that we talk about that are red flags that give us indications that something, you know, just isn't right. And, you know, that's when I really tell my law enforcement, you know, community or the nursing industry doctors, you know, trust those spidey senses, that sixth sense, the hair on the back of your neck. If it doesn't seem right, trust your instincts. You know, you may only run across this once, maybe twice in your whole life where you see something that just doesn't fit. It doesn't seem right. And so some of those things, very specific to, you know, when I talk to nurses and stuff like that, but we also show a video. It's called Look Again. And if you go on YouTube or Vimeo, Michigan State Police, Look Again, it was aimed at our service worker industry. And it was, you know, pretty subtle. It's a minute and a half long. And it's for people that were doing cable or maybe doing, you know, pest control in someone's yard, but they're invited to an area that most of the general public, it's not just the front door, right, where the UPS guy or the FedEx guy has access to. And they see a few things, maybe some bars on some windows, maybe a schedule or a padlock on an inside basement door. You know, some of the things where we see somebody forced back into a vehicle or inside a building, right, or away from a window. You know, it's just one of those things where it's not normal and it doesn't set well. It can be also some of the things that, you know, when I talk to nurses and doctors, you know, people that have excessive bruising, bite marks, cigarette burns, when they have bruises or broken bones in different stages. Maybe it's someone that has some sort of STD, they have an eating disorder, they have something else going on because they're being starved or they're being forced to look a certain way. And so those are some of those red flags. I get into a lot more with our nurses, especially on the medical side, when they're dealing with, you know, victims. And so, you know, those are the things that are going to be huge in identifying a victim.
This has been a very difficult topic today. You mentioned in your presentation Maslow's hierarchy of need, and that plays into why a victim becomes a victim and why they stay a victim.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you remember that intro to psychology course, right, that triangle, that pyramid, and in order to get to the top of that pyramid, there's those basic needs that you have to have that each and every one of us as a human being has to have. And if the person that's controlling your food, water, your basic necessities, and even your security is the person that's forcing you to do this, they've completely flipped that pyramid upside down. And so if they're controlling all of those other things, even up to, you know, the intimate relationships that you have on a daily, weekly basis now, there's no way that we can feel safe. There's no way that we can, you know, do those things. And so by flipping that pyramid, not only are they controlling that person, but psychologically, it feels like you're just, everything is against you. And so now you toss in maybe substance use. And we know that, you know, people under the addiction of substances will pretty much do anything to get those substances. They will even compromise their safety. They'll even compromise the food that they need on a daily basis just to get that drug of choice. And so now it's even more powerful.
Now we're winding up the program right now. What can people do and how can they get a presentation like I viewed with the Child Protection Council in Cadillac area? How can they become more knowledgeable on this subject?
So we have 32 different posts throughout the state. Every post has a community services trooper or someone that can come to your group and give a presentation like I did for the Child Abuse Council there in Cadillac. All you have to do is go to state police website, go to the grants and community services section, and you can see your CST, your community services trooper, and find out which one is closest to you. Contact them and they would be more than happy to set up and do a program for you and your group. Getting that information out there is that critical piece. And, you know, you toss the 1-800 number out there, 888-3737-888. That number, call 911, contact your local law enforcement. Again, most areas in the state, even calling 911 is the quickest way to get a hold of somebody just to try to, you know, to get a law enforcement officer to that red flag that you're seeing. Contact maybe the non-emergency line. If this is something that it's not ongoing right now, but you've seen something and it just doesn't sit right, and you can talk to your local detective at a police department, a sheriff's department, or the state police. You know, just contact us in some way, shape, or form, because if you're seeing those red flags, we want to make sure that we're not missing it.
Well, thank you very much, Trooper Corey. I want to close with this particular phrase. It's from the Bible commentary on Psalms 34:14. Merely refraining from evil is not good enough. We must be actively doing good. Listeners, I want to encourage you to be God's eyes, ears, mouth, hands, and feet. Don't get involved directly, but get a hold of the right authorities. Use this toll-free number, 888-3737-888. But don't merely refrain, but actively do something good. I'm your host, Tom Majur, for Strong Tower Radio. God bless.
You are about to experience are true. They will change your life if you let them. For they come from the very heart of God. He loves you, and He is the Father you have been looking for all your life. This is His love letter to you. My child, you may not know me, but I know everything about you. I know when you sit down and when you rise up. I am familiar with all your ways. Even the very hairs on your head are numbered, for you were made in my image. In me you live and move and have your being. For you are my offspring. I knew you even before you were conceived. I chose you when I planned creation. You were not a mistake. for all your days are written in my book. I determine the exact time of your birth and where you would live. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. I knit you together in your mother's womb and brought you forth on the day you were born. I have been misrepresented by those who don't know me. I am not distant and angry, but am the complete expression of love. And it is my desire to lavish my love on you, simply because you are my child and I am your father. I offer you more than your earthly father ever could, for I am the perfect father. Every good gift that you receive comes from my hand, for I am your provider and I meet all your needs. My plan for your future has always been filled with hope, because I love you with an everlasting love. My thoughts toward you are countless as the sand on the seashore, and I rejoice over you with singing. I will never stop doing good to you, for you are my treasured possession. I desire to establish you with all my heart and all my soul, and I want to show you great and marvelous things. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. Delight in me, and I will give you the desires of your heart, for it is I who gave you those desires. I am able to do more for you than you could possibly imagine, for I am your greatest encourager. I am also the Father who comforts you in all your troubles. When you are brokenhearted, I am close to you. As a shepherd carries a lamb, I have carried you close to my heart. One day, I will wipe away every tear from your eyes, and I'll take away all the pain you have suffered on this earth. I am your Father, and I love you even as I love my Son Jesus. For in Jesus, my love for you is revealed. He is the exact representation of my being. He came to demonstrate that I am for you, not against you, and to tell you that I am not counting your sins. Jesus died so that you and I could be reconciled. His death was the ultimate expression of my love for you. I gave up everything I loved that I might gain your love. If you receive the gift of my Son Jesus, you receive me. And nothing will ever separate you from my love again. Come home and I'll throw the biggest party heaven has ever seen. I have always been Father, and will always be Father. My question is, will you be my child? I am waiting for you. Love, your dad. Almighty God.
For more information about the Father's Love Letter, go to fatherslovelletter.com. That's fathers with an apostrophe S, loveletter.com.